From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour will be made, as we've been telling you, on Saturday, the first day of early voting. Voters in a number of local counties will see four candidates on their ballots for New York State Supreme Court Justice. There are two seats up for election in the 7th Judicial District this year, as current justices Nancy Smith and Tom Moran will be retiring. The 7th Judicial District includes Cayuga, Livingston, Monroe, Ontario, Seneca, Steuben, Wayne, and Yates counties. All four candidates have agreed to join us on this program together, which we always appreciate. We're going to discuss why they are running, their backgrounds and experience. We'll talk about the role of a state Supreme Court Justice, which is a 14-year term. And I'd like to welcome them now. We'll introduce them in the order in which they appear on the Monroe County Board of Elections Certification of Candidates list. Aaron Skinner, Democratic Working Families and Judicial Integrity Party Lines. Aaron, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
John Bringawad is in the Democratic and Working Families Parties Lines. John, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Stacey Romeo on the Republican and Conservative Party lines. Stacey, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Evan.
And same party lines, Republican and Conservative Party lines for Ed White. Ed, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Evan. Appreciate you having us here today.
Great chance for listeners to better understand who you are and why you're running. And we will certainly talk about what the Supreme Court does in this instance, but let me just kind of go around the table and we'll go in order here. Aaron, let me start with you. If you want to introduce yourself to listeners, tell us a little bit about yourself and why this is a position that you would like to hold.
Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Aaron Skinner. I grew up in Greece, New York, and currently live in Webster with my husband and our 6-year-old daughter. I went to Syracuse University for law school and have dedicated my entire career to public service. I was a criminal defense attorney for 5 years. I worked in the Monroe County Public Defender's Office, and I currently serve as the confidential law clerk to the Honorable Mark Montour at the Appellate Division here in Rochester, where we hear all of the appeals from Supreme Court, County Court, Family Court, Surrogates Court, and the Court of Claims from Buffalo to Syracuse. I decided to run for Supreme Court when I started to feel a little bit anxious about our national political scene and got tired of sitting at home on the couch and feeling like I was helpless and there was nothing that I could do. And I realized that I could run for Supreme Court. This is the way that I could serve my community. And so that's what we're doing.
Is there a website or more you want to direct people to?
Sure. It is Skinner24.com.
Skinner24.com. John Bringawat, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Evan. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is John Bringawat, running for New York State Supreme Court. I am born and raised in the city of Rochester, currently live in the town of Brighton with my wife and our two sons. I'm running because I see it as a continuation of my public service. I am a public servant at heart. I currently serve as the Monroe County Attorney, which means I am the county's general counsel, the county's chief civil lawyer. I supervise a team of more than 30 attorneys that does all the county's civil legal work, advises every county department, handles all the county's civil litigation. And so I'm looking to bring that wide range of experience to the bench. Before that, I was an attorney in private practice as well. Litigating mostly business disputes. And early in my career, I had an opportunity to serve as a law clerk for a federal court of appeals judge. So I think I bring the range of experience, the right experience that we need for Supreme Court, because Supreme Court is the court that hears the big civil cases in our New York State court system, and particularly the complicated civil cases that we have in our New York State courts.
Website bringawat24.com.
That's right.
All right. And John Bringawat's last name is spelled Bring E Watt, W-A-T-T. I think I did it all right. Thank you for being here, John. Stacey Romeo, the floor is yours.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Judge Stacey Romeo. I have been a Monroe County Family Court judge for the past 8 years. And in that capacity, I'm also the supervising judge for all the family courts in the entire 7th Judicial District, which covers all of the 8 counties of which I'm currently running. I've also been an acting Supreme Court judge for the past 6 years. Previous to that, I was in the legal community. I've been in our legal community for close to 30 years now. I've been a town attorney for both the towns of Irondequoit and Pittsford. I was a law clerk in family court and in Supreme Court. I have been a judicial hearing officer for small claims court, a foreclosure referee, a matrimonial referee, and a domestic violence hearing officer as well. So as you can see, I've got a lot of experience. As Supreme Court is the highest court you can get elected to, and I'm already doing that job, I just thought it was a natural progression for my career to take that path to run for New York State Supreme Court.
The website is electjudgeromeo.org. Org?
Correct.
O-R-G, electjudgeromeo.org. And finally, Ed White, Ed White's website, edwhiteforsupremecourt.com. The floor is yours, Ed.
Good afternoon. My name is Ed White. I spent the last 28 years in the Supreme Court working as a law clerk, court attorney to multiple judges. I certainly have the experience to be elevated to the bench. Basically, I'm one of the only ones that has worked in every single part of the court. So I have broad-based experience. Currently, I work for Judge Alex Renzi doing criminal. Prior to that, during that time frame, I've also been a town judge. And prior to my legal experience, I was a probation officer. So I have varied background and ready to take the bench. And one of the biggest reasons why I decided to run was I spent almost three decades backing up judges and helping judges along the way, so it just seemed like a natural progression for me to run for a Supreme Court position myself. I'm married. I have three college-age students, Seneca County resident, so I appreciate your consideration in the November election.
Well, let's start with the question of what the New York State Supreme Court does and maybe doesn't do. And I'm going to go back around the table, and I'll start with Ed here.
Sure.
When you talk to voters, how much do you feel like they understand what this position is?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, some voters do believe that it's the U.S. Supreme Court, and I explain to them, I say, no, it's the New York State Supreme
Court. Or some version of the New York Supreme Court that's kind of like
right,
federal,
like an appellate court.
Right, yeah.
So in a lot of states, their Supreme Court is their appellate court. In New York State, it's the Court of Appeals. That's the highest appellate court there is. The New York State Supreme Court is the highest trial level court of original jurisdiction, meaning a Supreme Court judge has jurisdiction over all types of cases. They don't necessarily handle all types of cases. For example, traffic is in town, village, and city courts. But they do have broad-based jurisdiction over everything else. The Supreme Court, you're elected to a 14-year term. Our appellate division, those judges are appointed from the Supreme Court. So you're a Supreme Court judge, you run for election, you're appointed to the appellate division. Our Court of Appeals judges, they aren't necessarily judges. You could be an attorney at a firm and get appointed. That's done by the governor, as is the appellate division is appointed by the governor. So that's basically a quick general background of Supreme Court. When I started in the courts 30 years ago, there was only one specialty part in the court. It was the commercial part, and that started about 1995. Since then, there's varied parts. There's the foreclosure part. There's the matrimonial part. There's the commercial part. There's general civil. There's criminal. So there's varied parts of the court, and judges are assigned based on the needs of the court.
Stacey Romeo, how often do people that you talk to express a little bit of confusion over what the role actually here is here?
Well, first of all, people don't really know what a judge does in general. Unless you actually have a purpose in the court system, or you have an appearance before a judge, whether it be a criminal matter or a matrimonial or a slip and fall or anything, if you have no contact with the court system, people don't know what a judge does. And they definitely don't know what a Supreme Court judge does. So part of our campaign strategy has been to explain to people what we all do and what our day job entails at the courthouse. So I think it's very enlightening when you talk to constituents to give them some background at how important it is for people to understand what our judicial system does and why they should come out and vote for all judges, not just our race, which clearly we all think is very important, but all judges on your ballot every year.
Okay, I mean, can we just change the name of this court? It's just too confusing.
What would you like to call it, Evan?
I don't know. You know, non-criminal, mostly civil, largely matrimonial. No, I don't know. I'm being facetious, but I do. We hear it every year from listeners. It's also one of the reasons that listeners do appreciate hearing you all at length here. So I'm grateful that you're all here. John, what about you? What are you hearing from voters on this?
Yeah, thanks, Evan. I love this question because I enjoy as I go out speaking to people and trying to educate voters about this court and the importance of this court. As you said, the name is confusing. So how I try to explain it is it's the Supreme Court because it is our highest level trial court, and because it is the court that has, as Ed alluded to, the widest jurisdiction. Here's the widest range of cases. It's in legal parlance, it's a court of general jurisdiction. So I think, I enjoy that aspect, but I do feel the need, you know, and that is, as Judge Romeo said, I think that's part of our campaign initiative as well, to educate folks, to tell folks that this matters, that the court does make big decisions that have an impact on people's lives. If you have a business dispute, if you have a serious personal injury, you're going to end up in New York State Supreme Court. If you have a question about your civil rights, if there's an issue of can the government do that in our state court system, those are all matters for the state Supreme Court. So I think, you know, we are trying to educate folks that this is an important race, that judges matter, and to please come out and vote.
Same question for you, Aaron Skinner. What have you been hearing?
It is difficult, and part of the difficulty I face is explaining to people my current role in the court system, because technically I work for a Supreme Court judge. He's an elected judge out of the 8th Judicial District in Buffalo, but he sits at the appellate level because he was appointed by the governor to that position. Or when I tell people that I worked at the New York State Court of Appeals in Albany, that is the highest court in New York State, and it's the court of last resort for state constitutional issues. If you have a federal constitutional issue and you get up to the Court of Appeals and they rule against you, you can try to seek leave to appeal to the United States Supreme Court. But the Court of Appeals is where all of our state constitutional issues are decided. So explaining that I've worked at the highest court in New York State, which is not the Supreme Court, and I've worked at the appellate level for a Supreme Court judge, but it's not the Supreme Court, it's been interesting. And I think that's part of why door knocking has been so important, to face-to-face with people and explain to them how the system works. Or to even let them know it was a Supreme Court judge who took the Prop 1 off the ballot initially. It was the appellate division who put it back on. It was a Supreme Court judge who ruled that the original redistricting lines were unconstitutional. Those are the types of issues that even if you are not appearing in court, they affect you. And so Supreme Court races really do matter.
Before we get into how some of your own personal experience you think will affect the work that you'll do in this position, let me also just ask you, Aaron, I'll start with you, how you view, you know, the question that voters sometimes have, which is, why is this a partisan race? You know, why are parties involved in this? Does that actually matter? Should we assume that a Democrat would behave differently than a Republican, or a conservative different than someone in the Working Families Party, or what have you? How do you talk to people about mm-hmm. how partisan or not this is?
I think all four of us would agree that judicial races are not political races. Judges are not political. And it is so important for the legitimacy of the judiciary that we make that clear. And the fact that we do have to run under a major party line is unfortunate. But despite the fact that there is a Democrat next to my name, or Working Families Party next to my name, or the judicial integrity line, which we had gone out and petitioned to get an independent line on the ballot for that very reason, because judges should not be political. Once you put that black robe on, your personal beliefs, politics, policies, they don't matter anymore.
So you would change this if you could?
There are some
similar to how school boards are voted.
Yep. And there are some states who their judges are apolitical. They do not run under a party. I don't know what that would look like. But it does make it harder to convince people that we are not political.
Okay. John Bringawat, do you get the sense that voters expect you to behave differently on the bench if you are a Republican or a Democrat? Do you think the judges do behave differently based on party lines?
I think everyone brings their own life experiences to the bench, right? I think sometimes it's been the idea that judges call balls and strikes might be an oversimplification. On the other hand, like Aaron said, the role is quite clear. The role is to apply the law to the facts presented to a judge, and that is a fundamentally nonpartisan activity. It partisan politics plays no role in it. So I think I've been pleasantly surprised, I would say, that as I talk to voters, they're most interested in talking about my experience. Who are you? What do you do? You know, why do you think you should be a judge? Rather than asking partisan political questions. So I think folks understand that the judiciary is different, but it's an interesting race to run as a candidate,
sure,
too,
yeah,
because in many ways, to a casual observer, it looks like any other partisan political race, right? As you said, we have party labels next to our names. We appear on the ballot right with the other candidates. But the fundamental principle of running a judicial campaign is we are not engaged in conventional political activity. It's our job to come out and talk about our experience, our credentials, and why we believe we're the best candidate for the role.
Stacey Romeo, same question. I'm curious how you talk to voters about that.
Well, I think it's been very interesting that folks want to ask us what our opinion is, especially, I think, me, because I'm already a sitting judge. They want to ask my opinion on certain cases and certain rulings, whether it be something I had or something most likely in the national news.
You love that, right?
I just relish when I have to tell someone who's considering voting for me, I can't answer your question. The standard line. So it's very interesting that we have to be affiliated with a party, but we can't be political. We can't talk about how we would rule for me, past or future or present. And it's really difficult to tell that to a voter who wants to know, well, what would you do about this? Or what do you feel about that? Or what do you think about that? And I can't tell them what I feel or what I think. So it's a little tricky when you're running, but yet you say, I'm affiliated with the Republican Party and the Conservative Party. That's my values. Those are the lines that support me because I'm aligned to some degree with some of those policies. Now, some of them we can't talk about, and I can't tell you if I agree with everything that those parties believe in or if I disagree with any of them. But just like everyone else in the world, I would assume that people agree with some things and disagree with other things. And I would hope that voters would understand that as a judicial candidate, that we are all constrained by those judicial ethics and that we all have the same thoughts and feelings as all of you. I agree with some things, but I don't agree with everything. But I can't tell you which is which, but please vote for me.
Ed White, how do you navigate that?
Interesting. I kind of just commenting on what Stacey said, I get the question, did you draft that opinion? I say, my name isn't on the bottom of it, so whether or not I drafted it doesn't matter. I look at it, it's definitely not political. And in fact, the electoral system is not political. Any one of us could have reached out to any of the parties involved and asked for their support. And if the party said, no, I'm not going to support you, we could have ran delegates. You put together a team, you go out, you run delegates. In fact, from the town court bench back in my town court days, I could be wrong on citing this. I think it's a Wilson Pakula. You don't need permission from the party, and you can run on all party lines if you want to. Now, it gets a little more difficult the higher courts you go, but certainly, county court level, if you have a team of people together, you can run in a primary in all parties. And even on the Supreme Court level, they do it by delegates. So the districts elect delegates, the delegates show up for what's called a convention, and then those delegates vote on the candidates they want to run for Supreme Court. You could run delegates in the districts and you could hold a convention, and if you prevail coming out of that convention, you could run on all parties. There's also a process of being cross-endorsed. So I certainly think politics are not involved to the level as in some races, like the legislative races, where that's far more difficult. I think that's how I look at it. And so people do have a choice. And I think that, there's arguments on both sides, whether or not it's a better system. But, my experience has been that politics plays its role in just about every type, whether it's an appointment system or it's an electoral system. There are politics that play their role.
We're talking to four candidates for two seats in New York State Supreme Court. And this is the seventh the 7th Judicial District. 8 different counties voting, and those candidates are all in studio with us. You just heard Ed White, Stacey Romeo, John Bringawat, Aaron Skinner, all with us. If you've got questions, listeners, we can take them. Connections at WXXI.org is the email for the program. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I want to go back across this panel and ask how these candidates view, they've all talked in part about some of their own experience, and that experience is pretty diverse and arrayed here at the table. What do they think is the most important piece of that that will affect your understanding and the work that you would have if you win this seat? Ed, for you, what is that? What stands out that says, I have had this kind of experience that really makes me feel like I can move into this seat and be prepared for it?
You know, I've worked in the court for 28 years. I've been an attorney law clerk in the Supreme Court for 28 years, worked for multiple judges over that 28-year span. In fact, I always, when Judge Ark retired last summer, one of the Supreme Court judges, out of all the attorneys and judges, I'm now the senior member in the Supreme Court staff. So I certainly have the experience, and I can tell you from when I started in the court system until now, the same issue presents itself. It's standard and goals, the old proverbial justice delayed is justice denied. I mean, we're always struggling and dealing with issues of getting cases through the system efficiently and justice for all. So, whether it's criminal, matrimonial, or general civil, it's the same issue in each one of those parts, is how do we effectively move cases along within what is called the standard and goal. So I that would be one of my top list items if I'm fortunate enough to win a seat this year.
Okay, Stacey Romeo, same question about your experience.
Well, since I've been sitting as a judge for the past 8 years and an acting Supreme Court judge for 6 years, I think people don't need to take a chance on me. They know that I can do the job. I have a proven track record. I've never been overturned on appeal. Folks in the community know me. Folks in the court system know me. As you heard, I have a very diversified background. I've always worked in community service and in public service for almost my entire career. And I think that matters. I think it matters when I hear the cases day to day that I'm really listening to people and I want to make sure that I'm doing the right thing every single day, and I'm giving back to those folks that we talked about how important it is that they don't have a lot of touches to the court system, but when they come in and they see a judge, they want to make sure that they've been heard. And that's what I do every single day. And that's what I will continue to do for the next 14 years, what I've already done for almost my entire career, but definitely the past 8 years of sitting as a judge.
John Bringawat, same question on experience. What do you value? I mean, everyone values their whole life experience, I'm sure, but really what stands out when you think about what prepares you for this?
Yeah. So I think my experience in the job I'm doing right now as county attorney really has prepared me very well for the bench. As county attorney, I'm leading a large law office that deals with the full range of issues that a Supreme Court judge would encounter. So every day I'm making decisions on matters from public safety, healthcare, infrastructure that affect our community, and again, present the same range of issues that a Supreme Court judge would deal with in their caseload.
Okay, Aaron Skinner, same question for you.
I think there's two things. One, I've been an advocate. When I was a criminal defense attorney, I know what it's like to be a lawyer with a client whose position you have to zealously advocate for, whether or not it annoys the court. And I've also had the opportunity to have this bird's eye view of hundreds of Supreme Court cases from the appellate division. So I've made that switch from being an advocate to being a neutral arbiter of the law. And I think having the ability to have reviewed hundreds of cases, not only at the Fourth Department, but also at the highest court in New York State, and basically being the umpire who calls the balls and strikes on what the trial court has done, has made me uniquely qualified to actually sit in the chair and make those decisions in the first instance.
Aaron Skinner, John Bringawat, Stacey Romeo, Ed White, all with us, the four candidates for 2 seats in the New York State Supreme Court in the 7th Judicial District. We'll entertain some of your feedback, if you got it, on email, and I'll start with a question on the phone, Bill in Hilton. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. I have one question for all four candidates, and I know it's not a political situation, but yet in a way it is, since they are running under a political party. So my question is this: Trump or no? Yes or no? Each candidate, please answer.
All right, Bill, thank you for the question. We'll see if they can or want to answer. Aaron, go ahead.
Oh, Bill, this is that terrible time that Judge Romeo was talking about, where I say I can't answer that question. Supreme Court candidates are bound by the ethics rules that do not allow us to share personal beliefs on issues like that. And I know that makes it difficult for us to then say to you, please vote for me. But unfortunately, that's the rules we're bound by.
By the way, before I turn to your co-panelist here, are you comfortable with the judicial ethics rules in this regard? Do you think that makes sense?
I do think it makes sense, because if I speak out on an issue, either for or against, once I take the bench, if that issue comes before the Supreme Court, one side is going to feel like I've already made up my mind. Whether or not that's true, it has the appearance of partiality. And that is one thing that the judiciary cannot stomach in order to keep its legitimacy, is that it doesn't matter.
Okay. John Bringawa?
I agree with my colleague. I think the judicial ethics rules are quite clear that we cannot endorse or condemn another candidate for office, be that president of the United States or local office. So unfortunately, also feel like we are constrained from answering that question by the rules that we are bound by as candidates.
Okay. Stacey Romeo.
I would just echo what the other candidate said and what I had said earlier. So although I really appreciate your wanting more information about us, Bill, I would just urge you to listen to everything that we've said today and hopefully make a determination based upon our qualifications.
Okay. Ed White?
I agree. Certainly commenting on that would be endorsing a candidate, and the rules prohibit us from doing that. So,
okay. Listen, Bill, I guess you shouldn't make any assumptions here. I mean, they are on party lines, but they probably would like to talk more at length about their views if they could. That's where we are. So, I wish we could give you more than that, Bill, but that's where it is. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. This is not meant to be sort of piggybacking off Bill. Let me just ask if the candidates feel like the courts are respected, if the position is respected, if this is, if the courtroom, generally speaking, Supreme Court or otherwise, is still a pretty sacred space and is the rule of law is well respected here. What do you see, Aaron?
I would say yes. I think it's very different from perhaps our national court system, which has statistically just seen a decline in people feeling that it's trustworthy. But on a local level, when people actually go into the courtroom, I do think that it is still a respected institute, and whether it's the attorneys or the litigants, when you hear that gavel bang and the all rise, you're rising not for the specific person walking out of the door. You are rising for everything that robe stands for, and the fact that we have one of the best justice systems in the world.
Now, this is important. We're not rising in sort of just deference or worship to an individual.
Correct.
It's respecting a system.
Yes.
And the system matters. The decline in American faith and trust in institutions has been pretty well measured. Although, when I make a blanket statement like that, I have no idea what the average New Yorker would say about the state Supreme Court system. I don't know. Hopefully, they view it very positively. I mean, I think it's positive when we have trust in our institutions. But there has been an erosion of that. Why do you think... You kind of talked about the difference between state and national, and why do you think that erosion of trust is going on?
I think because, well, one, nationally, it gets so much more coverage than our local Supreme Court does.
People are less familiar with the...
Correct.
Yeah.
And I think that people read the news coverage without reading the opinions that are issued, and the news coverage is often one side or the other. And so whether or not these decisions are right or wrong, I think it's always best to read those decisions. I teach a class at SUNY Brockport, and we've read through the recent Supreme Court cases where people have felt that it's been particularly political. And we just walk through them, and I ask them to look at it and analyze it themselves and come up with their own opinion about whether or not this is legally sound, whether or not this is a violation of precedent or things like that. So I would just encourage everyone to do that. I know we don't all have time to read these 100-page-long Supreme Court decisions, but it is fruitful and helpful to that conversation in a way that I think sometimes the media coverage is not.
You're right. We don't always have time for that. But many of us make time to have opinions about stuff we haven't read. Anyway, that's a whole separate thing. John Bringawat, do you feel like the courtroom is still a respected and sacred place? And what do you make of some of the erosion of trust in institutions generally?
I do. I do think the courtroom is a sacred place. I think it is essential that it remain a sacred place, that it remain a non-political place. That's why, again, you heard all of us declined to offer our opinions on things that we're not allowed to comment. And I think that's important to maintain that respect for the rules, because it maintains the integrity of the courts. It retains the independence of the courts. You know, you used the phrase earlier, Evan, the rule of law, right? That's what this is about. It is the fundamental duty of the courts to maintain the rule of law. That has been something I have been committed to my entire career, whether that's as county attorney, making sure that our government is operating in a legally compliant way, whether that is a law clerk for a federal court of appeals judge. Even before I went to law school, I worked for the American Bar Association for a program called the Rule of Law Initiative that tried to promote legal reform overseas. So that integrity of the courtroom is something that I really feel like I've dedicated my career to. I think it is unfortunate that there is a decline of, you know, public trust in institutions. I think, as you said, that's something we see across institutions. And I think there are social commentators who can break that down much better than I can. But I think, again, from my perspective and for the role I'm running for, I am absolutely committed to maintaining the sanctity of the courtroom and seeing that upholding the rule of law is our first and fundamental duty.
Okay, Stacey Romeo, how do you view these questions on how the courtroom is viewed and this erosion of public trust in institutions?
I think I have to disagree a little bit with what John and Aaron had stated, only because every day in my courtroom, I make sure that the rule of law is followed and that I, as well as everyone else in the courtroom, is respected. But I have to say that folks come in not with that mindset. I have definitely seen a decline from the beginning.
What's that look like?
So when I first started practicing almost 30 years ago, you would come in as an attorney and you were almost in awe of a judge. You were in the courthouse, in a courtroom, and there was definitely a level of decorum and civility. Erosion, as you put it, has eaten away at that over the years, to the point of, almost on a daily basis, I have to tell people to essentially remain respectful. They're constantly raising their voices, either at me or their attorneys or a litigant on the other side of the table. That respect is definitely dwindled over the years. But I find that it is my job as the judge in the courtroom to maintain that level of respect and to demand it for everyone. Not just for myself as someone who actually needs to actually hear what they're trying to say and their point. They're trying to get their point across. I get it. Folks are upset. But there definitely needs to be some legitimacy brought back to the courtroom. You know, we keep hearing about things that are going on in our school system and in our community, and I think it's a common theme. And it's up to the judges to bring that back and make sure that we are all respected in the court system, that we uphold the laws and the oath that I took 8 years ago.
A common theme as in less respect for authority?
Yes.
What do you think is driving that?
I think, unfortunately, the past several years especially, and I don't like to use COVID as an excuse, but I think when everything shut down, people were people had to find a new way to navigate their lives. And I think being taken away from each other and from, if we talk about the court system, coming back to the courthouse, we were open, but you weren't allowed to come in unless there was an emergency. I think that that idea of the judge being in charge and a level of authority just kind of got brushed to the wayside. People got used to, frankly, appearing in their pajamas on a Skype link, or now we use a Teams link. That legitimacy was taken away a little bit. And so part of, I'm on a committee now for the Bar Association and the judges to bring that back and make sure that people understand how important our jobs are every day and how important the court system is, and to make sure that folks understand that we're going to get back to the way we were before.
So you're connecting different societal pieces to what you see in the courtroom. You strike me as someone who does not wear pajamas on an airplane.
I don't wear pajamas to go to Wegmans either. No offense if you do, but I don't.
Ed White, do you see respect in the courtroom, for the system, and what do you make of the erosion of trust in public institutions?
I have to agree with Stacey on this one. I've been in the court system almost 3 decades, and I've seen an erosion. You know, one of the factors, you know, especially with the judiciary, is that judges can't comment. So somebody can be critical in the news regarding a judge's decision, and due to judicial ethics, they cannot comment, nor can they have other people on their behalf. In fact, this morning I was reading the New York Law Journal article. Apparently the Downstate Bar Association, they've gotten together, and they're saying that, you know, lawyers need to defend judges and their decisions. So, but I also say, you know, there's a common balance. I mean, we live in the greatest country in the world. We have First Amendment rights. So if people want to be critical, I guess they have those opportunities. But I do agree with Stacey. Post-COVID, things certainly dropped off. Yes, I've been in those Teams conferences where people have been in hotel rooms laying on beds with pajamas on while they've been conferencing cases. I mean, it's just, that is unbelievable. But it does happen. I do think it's the work that, you know, judges through local bar associations and attorneys need to address. But I also see the societal side of it. I mean, there's been some changes societally. I remember when I first started, I'd walk down on the Four Corners and everybody, you know, shirt and tie. And, you know, those days have kind of gone by the wayside. A lot of people go to work now with, you know, khakis and a golf shirt. So we've noticed it across the boards. But I think, you know, there hopefully will be some changes in that regard in the near future with, you know, lawyers and judges putting their heads together to address those issues.
I mean, I'm wearing decent shoes today, but I should probably tuck in my shirt. Let me ask you a question from a listener named Diane. Diane wants to know, says, I know that this particular court does not handle criminal cases, but do the candidates think that people of color are treated differently by the judicial system in this country? She says that's a broad issue, and she wants to know what the candidates think. Ed White, do you think people of color are treated differently by the court system?
Well, I'll answer the first question. The Supreme Court absolutely hears criminal cases. There's a number of judges that are assigned. I believe there may be 4 judges right now assigned to criminal part. In regard to the second question, again, I mean, without crossing any ethical parameters, I think that we have the fairest system in the world. Certainly, as John said earlier, that, you know, people bring some of their own ideas, beliefs, that type of thing to the bench with them. But anybody that appears in my court anyway, when I was a town judge and even with the judges I work for, everybody is respected the same. So I can't personally comment on what I've seen. I know that, you know, there's incidences in the newspapers and on the TV that we've seen. I have not personally dealt with that. So that's where I'll leave it.
Okay. Stacey Romeo?
I would just start off by saying, first of all, that I personally treat everyone fairly in my courtroom, no matter what color they are, what religion they practice. or any other factor that would be considered, everyone's treated fairly. But two things. First of all, the court system is very vigilant. We have constant trainings, not only for judges, but court staff alike, to make sure that folks understand that there might be some implicit bias and how we would combat that. And so we have trainings all the time, probably on a monthly basis. So we want to make sure that people aren't doing it outwardly. And if they are, how do we change that immediately? Or if they're doing it and they don't even know that they're doing it. So that's that implicit bias. I was also second on a committee probably about 4 years ago now. It was a judicial committee where folks, and it's still going on now, where they train folks in our community to come in and they get to judge the judges. They get to come in and make sure that we're hearing our cases and we don't have any biases of any kind when we're hearing a whole host of cases. So they give us a report card at the end. So we're all involved in that. And the court system takes it very seriously. And I know as a judge that my colleagues and I take it very seriously. And as a supervising judge, I sometimes get complaints about folks that feel that they're being treated unfairly for a whole host of reasons. And it's my job and my responsibility to take each one of those complaints seriously and to counsel anyone that might have any indicia of any kind of inappropriate treatment regarding anything. And it's not just color related. It could be sexual orientation or anything of that nature. So I would say to the question that was brought, we take it seriously, and I honestly don't see it in our system here in Monroe County.
John Bringawat?
I think we have to be aware that there is implicit bias. I think there is social science research that documents that there are systemic inequities in our court systems. So I think we have to start from a perspective of being aware of those facts. I think as a judge, then, it's important to certainly treat everyone with fairness, certainly apply the law even-handedly. That's the fundamental baseline. Beyond that, I think it's important to monitor, try to be aware of any implicit bias that you would bring. I think one way to do that is to make sure to give every case the individualized attention it deserves, rather than, maybe categorizing it, oh, it's this type of case, right? I think it's important to give everyone the individualized attention that is needed. Every case is the most important case to whoever's affected by that, whatever family is affected by that case. So I do think that's an important issue that any judge needs to take into consideration.
And Aaron Skinner, again, Diane's question, do you think let's clarify before we get Aaron's answer, because Diane said, I know that this court does not handle criminal cases. So just as a quick clarification, Aaron, do you want to?
We do.
Okay.
Yep. So the Supreme Court hears higher level felony cases. They have jurisdiction over criminal cases as well as civil. And I would echo Judge Romeo's statement that the court system is aware implicit bias is a problem, and they are engaging in trainings and things like that to remedy it. But you don't come up with a remedy unless you've acknowledged that there is an issue. And I would also say, working at the appellate division, we have the ability to reduce sentences for criminal defendants. And one of the things that I look at when I am reading a brief that's asking for a reduction in sentence is, what have courts done in the past when it has been a similar fact pattern with a similarly situated defendant? Is this in line with those decisions, or is this some type of aberration where it's either been too far or, too low the other way? But that's something that I've gotten to look at, have this bird's eye view of sentencing all throughout the 7th Judicial District. And just one last thing, as a former public defender, I can tell you I have had many clients who were stopped because they didn't have a bell on their bicycle, which you can imagine who it was that was stopped under those circumstances. You're not riding along the Erie Canal or, down in Greece on the street and getting stopped for not having a bell on your bike. So I think the answer to that, as John said, there's social science that backs up that is an issue in the court system.
Okay. Let me just make sure we clarify as well here. What is the kind of felony? What's an example of a kind of case that may end up in state Supreme Court?
I mean, they could hear murder, robbery, burglary.
Yeah. So anything you want to add there?
It's anything where a case has been indicted. So it's a felony level case that's been indicted. Will be heard either by county court or Supreme Court. It's on a wheel. So county court and Supreme Court level judges have the same authority to hear those indicted felony matters.
John?
I was just going to add what Stacey said, that so county court also has felony jurisdiction, which is why often for Supreme Court, we think of the big civil cases because the big civil cases can only be heard in Supreme Court. That's what makes Supreme Court special. But yes, Supreme Court also has felony jurisdiction.
Okay. A listener wanted to know that Ed had mentioned being a town judge. What town were you a judge in?
Town of Junius, where the Outlet Mall is.
Where the Outlet Mall is?
Where the Outlet Mall is.
Near Waterloo?
Yes.
I would say Waterloo Outlet Mall. Am I saying it?
It's the Waterloo Outlet Mall.
Am I taking credit away from Junius?
Yes. It's in the town of Junius. Mailing address Waterloo, town of Junius, though.
And you clerked for Renzi, is that right?
I'm clerking for Renzi currently, correct.
Okay, very good. Just a bio question on that. Okay, as we get ready to wrap here, our guests have been talking about their experience and how they view the office that they're running for. Four candidates, two seats at the state Supreme Court in the 7th Judicial District. Ed White, Stacey Romeo, John Bringawatt, Aaron Skinner, all with us. I would like them to talk a little bit about, just briefly, you've talked about how you see the court when it is working well and the hard work that you do to make sure it works well. I want to phrase this fairly because nobody here is disparaging the other. This has been a really good substantive conversation. And I'm not trying to provoke any disparaging. I want to ask you what you think happens when someone who's maybe less fit or not as qualified, and what is the risk when a court is not running as well as it should for people who end up appearing in a state Supreme Court? Aaron, can I start with you?
Of course. So one of the biggest problems that I see in reviewing Supreme Court cases is where there's a substantive motion filed where either the defendant is moving to dismiss the case before discovery has been completed, or where they're moving for summary judgment to dismiss the case after discovery has been completed, or the plaintiff has moved for summary judgment seeking a decision on an issue in the case. And the court issues an order granting or denying the motion, but they do not issue a decision or a memorandum or explain in the order why they have granted or denied the motion. And so not only does that make it difficult for the litigants in Supreme Court who do not know why the court did what it did, it makes it difficult for their attorneys who may not be able to say, this is why the court ruled the way it did. It was based on sound legal principles. It was based on a complete understanding of the facts. This would not be a good appellate issue. Let's move forward with this order. They don't know. And so they can appeal that order. It would come to the fourth department, and I would be looking at it thinking, I don't know why the court did what it did, and now I have to try to tease out the reasoning for this. So it not only is not fair to the litigants who, you know, when they're in court, it's a big deal to them. It may be administrative or routine for the judge and its staff and the attorneys, but it's not for the litigants. And so it's not fair to them. It wastes judicial resources, and it makes the case go on longer than maybe it needs to.
All right, about a minute apiece for the others here.
Sorry.
John, no, it's okay. No problem at all. John, go ahead.
I think, you know, earlier we were talking about trust right in the courts. I think if you have someone who is not well qualified or who isn't willing to do the work, you can have a breakdown of trust. People feel like they're not heard. And that could be simply because the case isn't getting the individualized attention it needs, or the judge misses the issue, as Aaron says, doesn't adequately document the issue. So I think it is important to elect people with the required expertise, with the required public service mindset, and frankly, who are willing to do the work, because it should be a hard job and it should be a lot of work.
Okay, Stacey Romeo?
Again, it's important to elect someone who has experience in Supreme Court so that they make the right decisions. So it's not a court of on-the-job learning. or on-the-job training. It's a court where folks expect that their cases are going to be heard timely. They don't have to waste a lot of time, years, in the court system. That's not judicial economy or efficiency of our services. So folks want to make sure that their cases are heard timely and the correct decision is made. So I would say not only, as John had said, trust of the court system, but we need to make sure that the right decisions are made in a timely fashion.
Okay. Ed White.
I agree. That's why I waited 28 years. I've interviewed for a Supreme Court position for 28 years. I certainly have the experience. But I will comment, sometimes qualifications or quality of judges, sometimes that's also a subjective situation, right? If you have cases pending and you don't like the outcome, the judge is at fault for that. So, but I've worked with judges and different degrees of experience. They have programs and trainings and things of that nature. But I would agree with Stacy that it's really not a position for on-the-job training. And again, with my 28 years of experience, I'm ready to hit the ground running.
I want to thank our guests for coming in and having this conversation and doing it here all together, all four candidates together for two seats. Ed White, his website is edwhiteforsupremecourt.com. Running on the Republican and Conservative Party lines. Ed, thank you for making time.
Thank you, Evan. Appreciate it. Great. I want to thank everyone here today, and it's been a great campaign season, and I appreciate the collegiality of everyone here.
ElectJudgeRomeo.org is Stacey Romeo's website. Again, it's ElectJudgeRomeo.org. Stacey Romeo running on the Republican and Conservative Party lines. Thank you for making time for the program today.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks for having me in today. I'm hoping that the listeners learned a lot about not only me, but my colleagues as well.
I think I can speak for everybody listening. I think it's been a very informative hour. John Bringawat, Bringawat24.com. John's party lines are Democratic and Working Families Party. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having us, Evan.
And Aaron Skinner, Skinner24.com. Aaron is running on the Democratic, Working Families, and Judicial Integrity Party lines. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
More connections coming up in just a moment.